This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. It's time to step up to the plate with Jim, Steve, Fish, and former two-time Gold Glover World Series champion, Benji Molina.
A swing and a miss, and that's the winner! That's the winner! A World Series winner for the Cardinals!
Ranger, that is! In the left field, December 3000, a run is scored!
Smith courts one into right down the line. It may go! Go crazy, folks! Go crazy!
A high pop ball! The Clover's there! The Cardinals won the pennant! The Cardinals won the pennant! The Cardinals won the pennant!
Breeze hits it in the air to center. We will see you tomorrow night.
Swing and a miss! The Cardinals are world champions for 2006.
In the air to left, well hit. Back is Craig. What a team. What a ride. The Cardinals are world champs in 2011.
Hello, Cardinal fans. Welcome to another edition of Ruffled Feathers, coming to you from the patio studios, and as always, brought to you by our good friends at Two Birds on a Bat. As I mentioned, we come to you from the patio studios, the original party place for St. Louis Cardinal fans everywhere, and we can't thank our good friends at InnovativeCompanies.com for their continued support of all our shows here at Two Birds on a Bat. Construction, heating and cooling, and electric is their specialty. Residential, commercial, industrial, doesn't matter. Randy Green is the name you know and trust. Make sure you check out his 35 years of experience. Check out his track record. Check out the people that know him. He's a good man who still believes his handshake and his word means something. That's InnovativeCompanies.com. Well, enjoying doing this show a whole bunch. It's been great. We've gotten a lot of great feedback. And, you know, having a cohort in crime, so to speak, that puts a ton of time in, means a lot to me as well. So let's welcome in my co-host, Ron Nuttall. What's going on?
Hey, great, Jim. How are you?
Well, I was trying my 1 o'clock in the morning DJ voice. I don't know. That's working out too well. I don't even know why I started doing that. But I'm enjoying the show. And I know you and I were kind of going back and forth. It's refreshing, too, to see the fans. It seems to be enjoying it as well.
Yeah, it really is. And I like how we're getting a pretty energized response to some of the poll questions that I know we'll get to here pretty soon. But yeah, there's a couple of really hot topics, and one of them even has a little bit more energy behind it today. So I know we'll get to that here in just a bit. But yeah, no, doing great. It's a little cold for Charlotte, North Carolina right now, though.
Well, I don't want to hear it. I would take 60s all day long and twice on Sunday. So. But whatever. But no, it's been great. I love the fan interaction. I think all the shows are feeding off one another, and we're building up quite a, our numbers are good, and everybody's happy, and things are going well. And I think, you know, adding this show to the mix was great. The text line's been awesome. You know, our friends at Patterson Tire and Service jumping on board and allowing us the opportunity to do that. It's been great, and I'm excited about it. So let's not mess around, man. Let's get right to it. I'm going to start. I want to start with a text line question because I think it's great. Can we do that? You okay with that?
Sure.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Because I think, we're a few days, we do the show once a week, and this was a hot topic on social media a few days ago, and I want to address it, and the gentleman texted us. So right off the bat on the Patterson Tire and Service text line, I want to hit up Edward. As he says, hey, this is Edward. I was just wondering what you guys think about the Lindor trade rumors. I don't think there's a snowball chance in hell we trade for him, but I'd love to hear what you all think. Well, I'll start because he might be my favorite player, one of my favorite players in baseball. It's funny because I've been saying on the show since the season's over that I have spent the last few years, and if people that have listened to the show religiously know, that I have tried to convince everyone and myself, I think I've tried to convince Mozeliak and DeWitt as well, that there were reasons the last couple years to go outside what would be their comfort zone and sign or trade for Stanton, whatever, but take on a superstar with a massive contract. Okay. Mm-hmm. I had my reasons why I felt there was a perfect storm for this stuff. And I do take into account, unlike most people, that it's a business. And to me, some of it was good business. Well, my issue right now is it's hard for me to do that because I look at what they have committed to players. And it's, you know, and it, I think I'm tainted. I'm a little tainted in the whole thing, because in the end for me, let's face it, I think their payroll, like last year they spent $170 something million. It's hard to complain and say they don't spend money. Okay. Right. They're already looking at like a crazy amount of money that they currently have owed for next year. And that's without adding anybody. So you have to be somewhat realistic about this whole thing. Right. But so I've said that I'm not going to go down that road again, because, you know, it was one thing for me to say, listen, you're sitting at $120, $130 million. You take on three, you're at $160 million. That's doable, right? Right? Well, shit, we're there now without it. And I know what a stretch that is. So it's hard for me to do that. Now, let me say this. Francisco Lindor checks every box you have and plays probably the toughest position to find a legit star in the game. Okay. Like there are stars in the game that play shortstop, but I mean, you talk about the opportunity to get one if one was available, right? And how hard it is to come up with one. The Cardinals, I mean, I like Paul DeJong. I like him. He's probably better suited as a third baseman, even though he's outplayed my expectations at short. But I don't know what he is offensively. I know what we think he could be. I know what Francisco Lindor is. And the thing about him is, he's going to make $16 million next year, and then he has another year of arbitration. So you're not trading for 1 year. You're trading for basically 2 years of him. So I find this interesting as all get out. Now, I would trade for him, and I would take, and I would trade what it takes. I think the only person in the whole system that is a real, like, they're not going to trade Flaherty, right? But the only person in the whole system that I think that you got to stop and scratch your head and say, it might be Dylan Carlson. Like, if Nolan Gorman's in a deal for Francisco Lindor, I do it every day of the week. Every day of the week. Okay? And it's going to take more than Gorman. Don't fool yourself. Okay? Right. But I don't know. But see, this is the type of answer that could immediately make them better. You solve a lot of problems with Francisco Lindor. He solves a big hole at the top of your lineup. He moves right into short. He's an athlete. He can play. Like, he's a superstar. Like, it solves a lot of problems. I love the idea. The snowball's chance in hell we trade for him. I will say this. They're much more likely to trade for a guy than to sign one that's a superstar. So they got that going for him. Your thoughts?
The last thing you said is if they are going to do that, that's what's most likely to happen. We just saw an example of that a year ago, right, with acquiring Paul Goldschmidt. You know, probably don't get him on the open market. If he were, you know, circumstances have been different, he becomes a free agent. You know, the Cardinals probably aren't, their chances are a lot less. I agree with you on that front. The talk of this really showed up post Mark Saxon mailbag article, where I don't know if he was asked the question or he was kind of looking at how would this be possible. In my mind, a trade, yes. And it really depends on who you're moving around. You know, what'd you say? You had 2 years of control left, right?
You have 2 years of control left. And, yeah. You know, it's hard not to imagine him wanting to see what he's worth on the open market. See, to me, with the position that he plays, and if he comes over here and does anything, you know, like he does, I mean, the expectation would be now he's your guy and you open the bank up and you say, here we go, take it. Because the time frame for him really works contract wise with some other stuff coming towards the end of some stuff. So, and again, I find myself now doing what I said I wouldn't do, but it is different because we're talking about a trade, which the Cardinals, you know, this screams of what they did with Ozuna.
Yeah. And, you know, they did with Goldschmidt, right?
Yeah. So. I mean, I don't know. Like I said, will they do it? Well, the problem is, just like everything else, there's a lot of teams that would like to have Francisco Lindor, right?
Yep.
There's teams that have great farm systems that would probably love to trade some stuff. But I promise you that, you know, most teams, I mean, Nolan Gorman's a top 100 prospect in baseball. He gets your attention real quick if you're willing to trade him. So now you're in the game if you really want to trade him. You know,
well, and if you start like writing down things that you would need to improve this offense, I think one of the glaring needs, but regardless of Ozuna stays, goes, who replaced them, but you look at everybody at the top end of that lineup. How do you get Goldie going? How do you get, you know, whoever's protecting him? How do you get everything going? And you got to start getting people on base. You got to start hitting a threat up there on the top of the order. And the only person well, there was two names this year that I think did a pretty decent job of that, and Tommy Edman and Colton Wong. I like seeing them up top, but boy, he does get, you talk about a table setter at the front of that lineup, and there you go. So I think that is a major box you can check off there. But probably like you, I think there's a slim chance of this maybe happening, because I could probably think of a few more teams that might match up with what Cleveland needs, perhaps a little bit better. But this is historically, if the Cardinals are going to acquire a big name, this is what they've done, going all the way back to Mark McGwire and Matt Holliday, Jim Edmonds, Scott Rolen. It was the trade for, let him experience Cardinal baseball and then sign him. So yeah, I'm with you there.
Yeah, I think we'd both be on board. I think we both know the difficulty in it, but fans would love the guy. He answers a lot of questions. You know, he would make you better instantly. And while I understand everybody's all thinks Nolan Gorman's going to be Stan Musial, and he might be, but we don't know that. But we know who Francisco Lindor is. So I would do it. I mean, it's a proven, like, I think if you go back and look at it, man, superstars that get traded for, how often do those prospects really work out? I mean, it's not like you think it is. Of course it's going to happen occasionally, but we've traded an awful lot of guys out of here that haven't turned out. I mean, don't you remember when we traded for Ozuna, how ignorant we were for trading Sierra and Alcantara?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yep.
I mean,
yep, I do.
You know,
and
I mean,
same with what was it, Brett Wallace?
Oh my God, Brett Wallace was the best hitter in the world coming out of college, and was gonna and went down, and you know, I there's a lot of that
in the world. I'll give it that. Biggest legs in the world.
Oh yeah. I mean, you could go on and on and on. You know, I mean, it's, you know, either we've been lucky or pretty good. You know, and then we've made a couple. Like, there's been other guys we've traded that social media's freaked out over. You know, I mean, just freaked out over. I can't remember the pitcher that we traded. Tyrell Jenkins. Remember him? What deal was he in?
It was to Atlanta, and I'm trying to remember who we got back in return. We dealt him to Atlanta. That was the Hayward deal, wasn't it?
Was he in the Hayward?
I think it was Miller.
Shelby Miller, yeah. Miller and Tyrell Jenkins. We got Jordan Walden. Yep, that's right.
I
remember that. Oh my God. Oh, yeah. Tyrell Jenkins. Can't trade Tyrell Jenkins. And then when Hayward walked, it was, oh my God, you traded Shelby Miller and Tyrell Jenkins. And it's like,
and Shelby Miller, I think if I'm not mistaken, he's been released. I don't know where he had one little
decent run. And people only remember what they want to remember.
Uh-huh.
You know, like the whole Lance Lynn thing now. Well, we let Lance Lynn walk. Yeah. Did you want to live with what he did immediately after we let him walk? I mean,
no, it looked like the right move, right?
Yeah,
he bounced back a bit.
So I don't know. The whole thing's interesting to me. All right, you're up. What you got?
All right, so I'm just going to go straight to a hot topic here.
Okay,
it's an interesting one, and so the first poll I sent out yesterday, I did try to put some humor into it, and you know, sometimes social media agrees with you, sometimes they don't. The question, as fans, are we ready to see balls and strikes judged by lasers, or do you prefer to stick with humans? And the options were robots, humans with cybernetics, and then let's clone Joe West. That was a joke, of course. But yeah, I think a majority of people. And
did you say Joe West? I did.
You know, just clone 15 of him. That way, every game gets called the same way or not. I don't know. Who knows? But 54, over half the people who voted on this. You know, they want to see the human element remain.
Isn't that amazing? Does that shock you?
Yeah.
Because I can promise you, I think I can almost promise you, not too long ago, I thought it would have been like 90%. But have you seen the recent art? I think part of the reason for the decline in that is that a couple things have happened recently. Number one, we're seeing articles saying that they're not as happy with it. The players aren't. And they've cherry picked a couple of calls, right, to say, right, hey, and if you do the research on it, what it is I think it's the high and the low strikes, because there's no definitive marking, right? Like, The bottom line is the inside and outside is an issue. And see, and I think that's why pitchers don't want it. Because pitchers know they get a lot on the outsides of the plate. What they, you know, the high and the low is hard for a human to call. And it's proven hard for a machine to call because of what it uses to gauge it. So, like, that's why I think all of a sudden now people are like, well, wait a minute. Why are the players not? You would think the players would like this. And then you can make it, well, the player don't like it if he got struck out. Well, the pitcher don't like it because he didn't get the calls. But they seem to be lobbying tonight. Now, I think it's like anything in life. When it affects you one way or the other, you get passionate about it for a minute until you get a level head. So right. It's almost like the level-headedness is prevailing a little bit here. Now, we're not talking about a large margin in the poll, but I do find that interesting only because until they can, like, I don't know. Now, I will say, I will give them credit for this, and I think you told me this before we started. I believe you said that it is coming next year to all of minor league baseball in 2020. Is that correct?
Not all parks. It didn't specify which would and which wouldn't, but they believe that the technology is there, the capability is there. They made strides last year. They like how it tested out in the Atlantic League. They tested out in the Arizona Fall League. So they will start rolling it out. I don't know what the improvement, they didn't get into the detail what the improvement they made this offseason was to the system, but they're going to start rolling it out in minor league baseball starting in 2020. Not in every park though. So they haven't really specified, you know, which, but, that to me is just, look, that's the next step to getting it into Major League Baseball. And, you know, Jim, what's interesting, you think about this, the human element in the game. And what do fans and teams, what do we get most frustrated over? And that's when it's inconsistent, right? And that's what will, as a human, that's what will happen. If a guy's calling an outside pitch, most teams and pitchers are fine with that as long as it's consistent and he's doing it for both sides. That when it's not that way, that's when we have been out of shape. I don't know how I would go about researching this, but if you just think back to the early 2000s when, you know, the offenses were just, you know, the whole league was on fire. Everybody's hitting home runs kind of like it is today, but we also had higher batting averages. And I just seem to remember watching a lot of games. This could be my memory just limited to the few things that I picked up on every now and then. And of course, I'm older now, so I probably forgot half of it. But I just seem to remember referring to the strike zone as a test tube constantly because it just seemed like it was like so tiny. And this year, I don't know for whatever reason, I was actually seeing strikes called at letter height, and with strikeouts being up, and I know the hitting approach and guys are being trained differently before, you know, this generation was perhaps brought up a little bit different in regards to hitting. I'm just wondering, like, has the strike zone expanded on some of these umpires at this point? And you would have to think if the technology worked, that the players would want to have it. But now guys aren't hitting that letter high strike anymore because they were never trained to, I guess. And I don't know. It'd be interesting to go back and check out on average. I don't know if this exists anywhere. Locations of balls and strikes over the last two decades. You know, it'd just be an interesting thing to take a look at. And I don't know how this would impact it at all. I just remember referring to the strike zone as just a tiny little tube years ago. And it seems like it's just gotten bigger. And that, maybe that's just me.
Well,
I might be crazy.
Well, here's always been my problem with, okay, so everybody knows at the youth level, they call a wide strike zone, and it's pissed me off forever when I'd coach. And then in high school, it's still big and everything. And I would tell these guys, I'd say, listen, I understand your theory, okay, right? Like kids struggle to throw strikes. So number one, what you've done is you've decided as an adult that the guy that you're going to help is the pitcher and not the hitter. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then they say, oh no, they can hit those pitches. And I say, get in there and hit them. Okay. Cover three balls off each side of the plate. Cause that's what you guys basically call. You can't do it when you're a kid. And what we see is tons of kids that get struck out on balls that they can't even reach. Okay. So that's frustrating. Right. And then in high school, you get into high school where the competition is supposed to be better and the strike zone still. Here's the problem with it. Something that everybody says, if you told me, Jimbo, my strike zone is a ball out, okay, a ball below the knee, and I'm going to call the letters, I would say, great. The problem is the plate is there for a reason on the inside and outside pitches. And it's always been that that plate doesn't move. So you have something to use as a barrier for the strike zone. The problem is when you go outside that, now you've lost your barrier. So to think that a human being could call it a ball out and no more every time is unrealistic. Because he just can't. One time it's going to be two balls, and one time it's going to be one ball, and then one time when it's two balls, he's not going to call. That's the problem, right? And I think that's right. What's going on here with this is that people are understanding if the computer, and I'm assuming this is where we're at with it, right? Like I would have to believe that the computer, the inside and outside is easy. The computer has to reset itself with every batter that comes in to that spot just below the knees and at the letters.
Right.
Okay, so I'm assuming, like, I can't believe we couldn't have the technology to do that. So that's fine. So if they're doing that, then that's fine. And that's where it becomes. Now, we've seen a couple pitches called strikes that obviously weren't strikes. I mean, we saw the couple of low ones that they said, well, the problem is that nicked the very front corner of the zone on its way down. Okay?
Yeah.
Which is going to bring back the, like, bring back nasty over the, like, over the top hooks. Okay, which is going to change the game of baseball for sure. I promise you if that's the case. Now, because it doesn't get called right now. Okay, mm-hmm. It's almost like a slow pitch softball that comes down through the zone. Right? Like, that's not how these guys approach that right now. Like, that's, to be quite frank with you, a 12-6 curveball that nicks the front of the zone and spikes in the dirt is almost unhittable to some degree. It'd be really hard. I'm not saying it's unhittable, but I'm saying is it'd be really hard to square up on a consistent basis, I promise you. So that being said, if the issue is they can't get it right because of the up and down, it's the same issue we have now on in and out when guys give outside the pitch. It's going to be somewhat. See, to take this conversation full circle for me, the thing that I have the biggest issue with that I just can't believe, like, I don't understand, like, and I'm sure you saw the videos. It's when they call it a strike and it's either a quote unquote, the hitter, obviously. And in some of these instances, the catcher and the pitcher, both, they don't think it's a strike. And the guy calls it a strike like 4 seconds later or 3 seconds later. You can't tell me they don't have the technology that the minute that ball hits them. Have you ever been to Busch Stadium and paid attention to the guy running the scoreboard?
Yeah.
He's got the ball and strike up at the, I mean, before you can look up and look at the scoreboard. Okay.
It's funny you say that because I've noticed that before too.
Okay.
Now I've noticed the same thing.
So there's no way. Now he's wrong every blue moon, right? Okay.
Yeah.
But my point is, and you can't be wrong in this instance, and I understand that. But my point is, there's no way that some computer that when it goes through, it doesn't beep in the guy's ear, and there's no thinking involved. You hear the beep, strike, no beep, ball. Yep. I mean, I don't, like, there's no way that they don't have that. Now, maybe that is part of the improvement, and I do applaud them. I will say that Major League Baseball gets a lot of shit wrong. They get some shit right, too, right? Like, not rushing this into the big leagues, if they're going to do it, I applaud them for that, at least, because I do think it needs to be widespread through the minor leagues before they ever think about doing it here.
I couldn't agree with you more. And, you know, whenever it's just like a prospect, Jim, you rush it to the league too soon and it's not working, right? It's essentially, it's going to be done.
And you got to admit failure, which they don't like to do. Like, right. Well, that didn't work.
Right.
That's good stuff.
If this can work, just my opinion to cap it off, I think if this can work, I believe that it would be one of the many things it's going to take, but it would contribute to pace of the game. You know, you still might have a manager come out and lose his mind every so often because he's not agreeing with it. But if it works, it probably should be done. And like all the other things that have changed in this game, I remember when interleague play became a thing, and I didn't like it because I liked the rarity that the National League team and American League team met up. It was only at the World Series, not counting the All-Star game. And I thought that was really cool, you know, interleague happened and we got used to it. And now I don't even really think about it anymore. And some of the other changes, like we went from two divisions in each league to three and went to a wild card. And then we added a second wild card. It's all these things that, like, man, I'm not really sure. This doesn't feel right. Tradition, all this. Well, you know, some of those other things we've kind of forgotten about. Those were big changes. Now, there's always been an umpire behind the plate in charge of calling balls and strikes since the inception of this game, right? So that it's a big thing to change, but
It's bigger than people think it is. They think it's like no big deal.
Yeah.
You know, and they obviously still have to be out there, but still.
Yeah, there still has to be somebody there to, you know, call an out tag at the plate, you know, to a foul ball. I mean, there's still going to have to be somebody there, but it's almost, Jim, it feels like rather than a board or something registering a ball or strike, I kind of like what you said, if they implemented where it was the umpire knows behind the plate and he can make the call, but it's not like up on a big board or a green light flashes when it's a ball. I mean, there's got to be a good way to do it where you're still making that umpire relevant.
See, I'll give you the final thought on this and then we'll move on. But the bottom line is this. If you ask my opinion of replay in all sports, I don't like it. And it's because of this reason. Just like everything in life, I believe common sense is out the window. Okay. And what I mean by that is, what is replay really supposed to be for? Replay is supposed to be for 1985. That's what replay is supposed to be for. Okay.
Yep.
It's not supposed to be for making sure that on a double play that the second baseman touched the bag and he didn't ghost it. It's not supposed to be because when a guy hit a ball in the gap and he busted ass to second and he slid hard and it was a banger and he may have come up off the bag for a split second. That's not what it's for. It's not what it's for. It's just not. Okay, it's not in there so that every banger, we have to wait 10 seconds, 15, 20 seconds while the manager turns around and looks at his guy and he's on the phone and somebody's up in the sky looking at it on replay. That's not what it's for. Well, I'm telling you, you want to fix this problem, I very rarely think I have the answer to everything. I've got the answer to this one. It's really, really simple. Okay, you will fix this problem with that part of it. You'll fix half the problem if you simply the bottom line is they got 5 seconds. Okay, because the manager or the player or whoever, if they feel strongly enough about it that you blew that call, that to their naked eye that you blew it, and you want to replay, then replay the damn thing. But if you got to go to a video camera to see if the umpire blew a call frame by frame, and what we do know is what? They get it right, 90-something percent of the time?
Quite often.
Okay.
Quite often they do make the right call.
So the bottom line is, it better be a play that is so egregious that the bottom line is it happens and you go replay it. You know what I mean?
Well, you know what happens too, Jim, is that, you know, you get a manager who's getting later in a game, he feels like he almost has to use that. Even if we look at the replay.
Yeah, we've seen it. It's happened, sure.
Yeah, you know, it's like, well, I might as well roll the dice because I only have one to use. I might as well use it now. And so they use it knowing it's not going to be overturned.
Because look at the flip side of it. What have we done with it? For the little bit of good that it's done, and I mean that, the little bit of good that it's done, all it's done, I mean, NFL has the biggest problem with it. I said it out last night. The bottom line is they used to not know what a damn catch was. Okay, now they don't know what pass interference is. They have clearly pass interference calls that they review and they don't call it. I mean, it's right there and they don't call it because the NFL is clearly trying to stop them from using it for that. Like, quit asking for interference because we're not going to call it unless I think they've called it a few times where the guy's basically been pickpocketed and mugged. Okay.
Yeah.
Otherwise, nothing. Same thing here. How many plays have we seen that were like, well, he's clearly out, up safe, not enough. I mean, all you're doing is causing yourself problems. Get rid of it, unless you do it the way I said to do it, and then you have no issue. Like I said, if it's a call that you believe in your heart that you saw just like that umpire did, and it was that egregious, then yes, use your replay. I don't understand it. I don't like it. I can't even imagine. It just blows my mind. It's in place for exactly what happened in 1985. That's what it's there for. That's what it's there for. And now we basically, see what we've done is, that's what the robot ump is. He's basically replay for every pitch. That's what it is. That is what it is.
Good way to put it.
All right.
You know, I like it all for the in the effort to try to get things called right, I favor it. But they do need to figure out a more practical way to speed this up. And so that would be my final thought on it.
All right, let's. I want to go back to the text line. Do one more text today, and I do want to. Okay. Because I just think some of these are really good, and some of them I find interesting how we come full circle and we seem to not ever want to let things go. And I'm not on this guy about it, but before I do though, I do want to thank our friends at Patterson Tire and Service for bringing us the text line. Without their support, we couldn't do the show. Give them a call for a quote, 618-797-6711, 3718 Highway 111 in Granite City, Illinois, 62040. They are a whole lot more than a tire store. Of course, you know them as doing brakes and great deals on tires, and you can always count on them to do great service there. But if you need service, let them help. They do automotive repair as well. Give them a call. Like I said, you can get a quote right over the phone. I believe you can do it on their wonderful website, PattersonTires.com. Great family, been involved in their community for a long, long time right over there in Granite City, Illinois. And people come from all over because they know they're going to get a great deal, great service, and fair and honest work out of Patterson Tire and Service. Tremendous people. Really appreciate the fact that they wanted to be involved. They're sports oriented. They love sports, and they've had luck, with Cardinal fans and Blues fans over the years. So we were a logical fit for them, and we can't thank them enough for wanting to come on board. That's Patterson Tire and Service, a whole lot more than a tire store. All right. I love this one because this has came up before, because it's the old, and I'm not on him. Okay. So I'm going to read it. Instead of going for that flashy move at third base like a Rendon or Donaldson, I believe the Cardinals should move for an underrated guy like Kyle Seager, former Gold Glover with some pop, left-handed side. Mariners have a history of taking on bad contracts, and I would think they would get them to take some of Fowler's contract and throw in a mid-level prospect as long as Fowler would waive his no-trade clause. Thanks, Jake. Well, number one, let's go through this. And I'm not on you, Jake, okay? I understand the thing, but here's the deal. They're going to take Fowler if we're going to take Seager because of the money. Okay. Now the problem is that puts you right where you're at right now, because if you could trade Fowler and Carpenter for Seager, I might entertain it. Right. But the bottom line is right now you feel like you obviously feel just like I do. And most people do that you're hindered by Fowler and Carpenter together. Okay, so if you trade a Carpenter or Fowler, the whole hope would be is that you would trade them and get really no salary back, even though you may have to eat half of it to trade them. The bottom line is you take another guy on, now you're right back where you started, and I don't mind Kyle Seager, but let's face it, he's not I don't think he's going to be a significant upgrade. So I don't know that really works. You've kind of got your own Kyle Seager already. And if I'm not mistaken, I think Kyle Seager, I can look it up, but maybe Ron. I mean, I'm not quite sure. He doesn't make – he makes a lot of money. I'm not sure what it is, but I think he makes a lot of money too.
I'm on it. My initial reaction to him was kind of like
– he makes Carpenter money. He makes same money Carpenter makes. And hang on. Yeah, he makes same money Carpenter makes. What's Carpenter got, 2 years now, this year and next year?
Yep, he's got 2 years.
Yeah, they're basically the same guy. And his 20, like, there's escalator. I don't know. I don't see it. Do you see it?
No, because I think you're just trading one problem for another. You're not really upgrading there. I realize the Seager might, he probably edges out Carpenter defensively, but that doesn't seem too hard to do. He's on the books for the next 2 years with a team option for 22. So he right there. They're making the same. You're not really getting anywhere.
Yeah, I just think you're – well, and now, listen, this is where I can – I'm probably a little bit like Jake. It's like, well, I want to do something, do I want to sit another year and watch him struggle? Maybe a change of pace. And Kyle Seager's had some good years, just like Carp's had some good years. I mean, Seager's a – 20-something home run, 30 home run guy in a big park. They might be the same guy. I don't know.
If you look at the last 2 years, what they've been at the plate has been 2018, Kyle Seager. Yeah, I mean, he had a full season, 155 games, batted .221, OPS at .673. A little bit better OPS, but he had limited playing time, so he was dealing with, looked like, probably an injury. A little bit better year last year. But still, yeah, I'm not even paying attention to the whole left-handed, right-handed batter thing. I don't think it matters. And Kyle Seager is a right-handed batter, right?
Oh, he's a left-handed batter.
Oh, he's a left-handed batter?
Okay. Yeah, throws right, left-handed batter, yep.
Oh, yeah. Yep, you're right. So, I mean, yeah, it's a clone.
Yeah. This would purely, like, number one, this would be a purely, I take your problem, you take my problem trade.
Yeah, and that happens.
It does happen, but I would say, to be frank, I don't think this would happen. You have a better chance if you told me you were going to trade Carpenter for Seager. I don't think we need two Matt Carpenters, and that's exactly what you'd have, is two Matt Carpenters. I don't see it. I understand the theory, though, because I think you get to a point where it's like, let's try a change of scenery. Now, what I will tell you is I doubt very much. I think you have a better chance of Kyle Seager agreeing, which he probably has a no trade. I didn't even look at it, but is he a 10-5 guy? He's a 10-5 guy, isn't he?
No, he's not.
Okay. So the bottom line is he's almost 10-5. So the bottom line is this with Kyle Seager. He's been with that organization his whole life. So I don't even know like what his situation is, if he has a no trade or not. But I know who does, and that's Matt Carpenter. And if you tell Matt Carpenter we're going to trade you to Seattle, I don't think he's going to be doing cartwheels through the clubhouse. So another part of this.
You throw Dex Fowler in the same boat. He's got a no trade as well, and I can see the same result. Yeah. Either way, I think I get where the person's coming from because we've heard of it before. We've seen it before. Bad contract for a bad contract. You get the guys in a different clubhouse, different mix, different city. You know, maybe it gives them a jump start. Shocks them back to life for a year or two. And sometimes that works, but I don't. Well, first of all, the first part of that text, I'm totally with the caller on this one, or the texter is, and Jake, right?
Yes.
You know, them going out and getting the flashy free agent is highly unlikely.
Sure. It'd
be very uncardinal-like to do that. So I agree with this first part. So yeah, why go, then let's look a tier or two down and see what we can do. So I think I get the sentiment.
Yeah, and I want to specify to him. I'm not on you. Like, I don't think you're stupid I just want to make sure it comes across that way. I completely understand where you're going with this. 100% understand where you're going with this. I think that, like I said, if you were going to tell me that Matt Carpenter was going to agree to go to, I'll tell you where I'm at on it. If you told me the Cardinals have worked out a deal with Seattle, and Seattle's going to take Carpenter, and we're going to take Seager straight up, we're just going to give them both a scenery, and both players have, again, I don't know for sure what Seager's situation is, but I know that Matt Carpenter, but everybody's good, and we've made this trade, and I wouldn't go, what are they doing? I wouldn't.
Right.
I'd be like, okay, I get it. We're going to try something different. It reminds me a little bit of, like I said last year when I said, the guy that I would sign, and again, I'm not saying this because it worked out. I get it. It could have not worked out, and I'd still say the same thing. I said Michael Brantley was the guy that I thought would have been a great number two hitter for the Cardinals, and he would have filled the void for us, right? Now that obviously would have been them deciding, well, we're Dexter Fowler's going to be on the bench then, right? Because that's what it would have had to have been, or they would have had to have moved him to center, right? In my theory last year. And everybody told me, well, Michael Brantley's basically Dexter Fowler. What are you doing? You want to do that again? And I said, well, I think he's better than that, but I look at your numbers and kind of get it, right? But the bottom line is sometimes when you're comparing guys, you're looking at their better years and saying, well, I think if Dexter Fowler's as good as he was 4 years ago or whatever it was, Michael Brantley and him are the same player. And it's like, well, I don't know that they are right now. So I, like I said, man, that's a tough call. I don't know. Like I said, if you told me, I don't know about you. I'll say that here. I'll end it with this. If that trade happened tomorrow and it was Carpenter for Seager straight up and it was done, I would actually probably be minorly excited about that, to be honest with you. And people the Carpenter fans are going to be like, are you kidding me? And I'm like, no, I'm not. I'm over, like, I hate to say this, man. And I've had a couple conversations with people on Twitter. I'm over Carp. I really am. Because my problem is, and I understand, we have a really good follower, Corey, because, man, I think you're undervaluing Carp. I know he had an awful year last year, but you do realize that and he went through this, and he's right. Like, my problem is when a guy like that goes way south, he offers nothing else, and he hamstrings the hell out of you. See, for me, and this is going to sound crazy, like, Harrison Bader drives me crazy too, right? But, like, he can do so many things even when he's not hitting. But it comes down to you got to hit, right? Like, he got so bad, you know, like, you probably could have lived with Harrison Bader hitting 240 if he hit a few more home runs. You can't live with a guy hitting under 200 at times. You know what I mean? The bottom line is, and he was getting on base. The bottom line is, though, like, I'm looking at Carp and I'm going, he goes, man, this guy hits some homers and a lot of doubles. And I'm like, well, I understand that he has in the past. But when he's not doing that, he is a 100% across the board liability. You all saw the difference when Harrison Bader was going better, when Tommy Edman was doing, when Colton Wong was going better. The athleticism and the ability to carry themselves on the baseball diamond in more capacities other than just the ability to hit a few home runs when you're hot or be hot for a month or two, let's be frank, right? It really, really comes into play here, in my opinion.
Okay, you know, I wouldn't even say that I have a frustration with Matt Carpenter, almost with Chris Carpenter.
Yeah, don't say Chris Carpenter. That'd be blasphemy.
No. Yeah, it would be. It would be. And I miss a guy like that, to be honest with you. But in regards to Matt Carpenter, I think the thing that I kind of seen with him over the years is that I think the mistake was starting to be made when he was put into a position that not really him. You know, I've never looked at Matt Carpenter one time, even when he was going well, and said, man, that's a core player. That's a player you got to, that's one of your pillars. That's one of your MV3 type guys you're going to lean on for years. And, you know, they plugged him into the three hole and said, you know, hey, look, he's been our best hitter, you know, in a couple of years. So we're going to, you know, we can plug him right here in a three. We've lost nothing. Wrong. He couldn't handle it. That's not what Matt Carpenter was at his best when he was a role player. When he had a very specific job to do, and that was just get on base. And that was it. Don't worry about home runs. Don't worry about all this. You don't have to carry the team. You just get on base. And that was when he was at his best. I think the slide, and I know he had that great 3 months in the middle of 2018. I'm not going to ignore that, but he was at his best when he was a role player. If you ask him to be more than that, he's not. And I guess I'll just leave it at that. I'm not disappointed or frustrated with him. It's just, I don't see a bounce back in him. And I think he's best used off the bench at this point. And unfortunately, he's going to be cut a couple big checks over the next few years. But it is what it is. It's a gamble that Mo took on him, and it's not working out.
Yeah, the thing for me, like I said, I think what it all comes down to for all this stuff is I think we know where we sit salary-wise. I think in the end, the Cardinals are going to have to be what the term that we use, which is creative. And I know we're getting ready to talk about a fun part of a poll you did with words, but creative is a word that I can handle, because in the end, like, it through all of this, the one thing that I'm 100% on board with is find a creative way to get Francisco Lindor. And I know, and here it is, folks, in the end, the question is, would you trade Nolan Gorman? Because that's the guy that you're going to trade that everybody's going to lose their shit over. There's going to be another guy or two that are going to be those guys that have that are really good prospects too, or like I said, I don't know if a Harrison Bader included that, maybe Elaine Thomas, maybe a Randy Arozarena, I don't care, maybe a Kneiser, I don't know. I don't know what the answer is there. But my point is, the one guy that everybody's going to lose their shit over is Gorman, right?
Right. Yeah, I could see that happen.
So that's really what it is. Like, the question in the end is, would you trade Gorman? And the reason it's would you trade Gorman is because I think whether it's Lindor or anything, I think the only answer here is like a Mozeliak creative trade, right? And that's who it's going to center around. You're not going to bring back, like, obviously, the reason I say Gorman is because I've already said I think the guy I'm not trading is Dylan Carlson. And mind you, my thing about Gorman is I've talked to some people that tell me he's never playing third base in the big leagues. Like, they can already see that it's not happening. Like, not going to happen. There's going to be a position change here. okay? And whenever there's a position change, now a logical one for him would be eventually to move to first base. A lot of times third baseman to first base. Well, we got a first baseman signed for 5 more years. And a lot of times when a guy goes into the outfield, I mean, we've seen how that works, right?
Well, now, we saw Albert do it for 1 year in 2003.
Yeah. I'm not saying he can't, but that's what I've been told is he's probably going to move to left field. You know, yeah, okay. So, okay.
Yeah, I think I've heard it from you, because I know I've heard the same thing.
Okay.
It was you.
And again, you don't know these things for sure, but, you know, you trust people that do this for a living, and they say, you know, it just looks that way. But you're going to give him every opportunity to play there, because why? Right now, he's not coming up. And the bottom line is, and that's the whole Lindor thing, too. Finding guys that can play on the left side of the infield is really, really hard, because everybody wants them. Right?
Well, yeah. Well, of course. And,
so if this is your chance, do you trade him? There's the question. Would you trade Gorman? If you ask me, yeah, in the right deal. Is Francisco Lindor the right deal? You bet your ass it is. That's what I say.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm with you there, Jim. I mean, if there's a known out there, he's one of the few. I think you know what you're going to get. And a prospect with a name like that, with all the, I don't want to say hype because it might only be hype within the Cardinals community, but I wouldn't be scared of it, especially for a known, and knowing that the formula for them for years has not been, you're not going to win on the open market, but you can win if you trade for them and get them in here and then extend them. That's been the way they've done it for a long time, with the exception of Jason Hayward, which the baseball gods were looking over us on that one. But hey, since you were talking about left field, Jim, I'm going to go to this other poll question. We can get through this one quickly. We've discussed this one a lot before I get to the C's.
Okay.
So the Cardinals have officially given out the qualifying offer to Marcell Ozuna.
Okay.
It's not a surprise, right? We knew that was going to happen. Now, I asked the community, like the fans, how many really want him back? And comment your thoughts and remember to hashtag it. So 60% are fine if he leaves. And 40% hope he accepts / extends. I probably should have had a third option on there to split those apart. But I think the feeling I get is that most are okay if one or two things happen. They're okay if he walks, then we got the compensation pick, and then we've got then it's competition for left field, which many of us want to see. The other are okay if he just takes a 1 year qualifying offer and then walks. A lot of people are there's very few. The fewest are, yeah, I hope they extend it. Right. So I think the fan community are okay with the one or two options. Most are okay if he leaves, followed by, yes, I'm okay if he accepts the QO, and few who would like to see them keep him long term. I don't know where you're at on all this. I know we've covered it a little bit, so I thought we could get through this one pretty quick.
Well, it's tough for me, right? Because I think there's a logical thing here of who's gonna play there. Like, I don't listen. I've said my piece on this. The Cardinals are gonna open that thing up, I think. I believe it. It's gonna be an open competition. But as I said yesterday, if we're gonna have an open competition, then let's have an open competition. Don't have an open competition and tell me Dexter Fowler starting in right field.
Mm-hmm.
Let's have an open competition. I can promise Marcell Ozuna is gone. He's gone.
I agree. Yeah, I agree.
He's gone. You know, I'm seeing and again, there are rumors, right? But let's face it, it's all starting up right now, right? So there's talk, right? Like, there's a reason he's being linked to Chicago so much, the White Sox. Like, there's a reason, right? And they're looking at their – now, I find that, like, I look at some of their young talent up there, and I go, man, what are they doing? They got a Jose – like, I find – but there's a reason. Like, where is it coming from? And some of the numbers thrown around with him, four years, $100 million, I mean –
So MLB Trade Rumors did have a scenario on there. They're predicting he goes to San Francisco, and I not a team I would have chose, but San Francisco, 3 years, 45, which that's lower than as far as you're just looking at average annual value, that's obviously a lot lower than the 17.8 he could get for a one-year deal. If that's all he can get out there on that open market, and that's what his agents are telling him, I think I don't think it's a big chance, but I think there's a realistic possibility that he does accept.
My guess would be there's been rumblings the last day now that the Cardinals have talked to him, right?
Or plan to over the next 10 days before the deadline. Yeah.
Well, right. my assumption would be is that his his people have been doing their, I'm going to use a Mo word because I know where we're going here in a minute. They've done their due diligence. And right. they kind of have an idea what the market is for them out there if they, because that's what they've done. They've been talking to people for a while now, whether they're supposed to or not, finding out what's out there. So then they decide, well, do we play for 1 year? Like, is that a pillow deal for him, a 1 year deal for him? Because like, how much better can he be here? You know what I mean? Like, it just almost feels like for him. Now, the one thing about it is, and I don't know the rules 100%, but I do believe if he takes the qualifying offer now, if he takes the qualifying offer, they can't do
they
it.
Can't offer another.
Yes.
Right.
So, you know, he may look at it and go, look, man, I'll take my 17.8. I'll stay here. Yachty's here another year. I love playing with Yachty. Love Jose. Love whatever. Love the town. You know, I'm just going to play here for another year. And then I'll sign a contract next year and whatever I get, but I made $17.8 million this year. Now, what, like I said, my guess is he's done his homework out there and he has an idea what he's looking at, but we'll find out. I got to tell you the truth, man. I don't have an opinion one way or the other. I really don't. I'm fascinated by the corner we've put ourselves in here. Because like I've said before, to me in the end, the real issue becomes if it's not Marcell Ozuna, in the end, like it's not the outfield thing. If it's not Marcell Ozuna batting behind Paul Goldschmidt, who's it going to be? I mean, look at your lineup and you tell me who it's going to be. Even if Dylan Carlson's the savior, are you going to bat him fourth on opening day? Is Lane Thomas going to bat fourth on opening day?
You would think if it was a team that was in kind of rebuild mode, that's a possibility, but not that.
Is Randy or Rosarena going to bat fourth on opening day? I can tell you, bottom line is it's Paul DeJong. I mean, that's it. Look at it. I mean, that's it.
You might be right.
No, I didn't. I think he batted third or fourth, wasn't it the first month of the season or something, or first month two, and he did pretty well.
Yeah, well, because Goldschmidt was batting second.
Right.
And so he was. And he spent a good portion of 2018, I believe, either in the three or four positions as well. So, we'll see. That's I'm kind of with you. I'd like to see the competition now. It scares me a little bit when the whole outfield is up for competition. It should be, but that just means you've got some issues there.
Hey,
hopefully
here's the deal.
Prospects, you got some answers.
Here, let me give you something here, and you'll love this. I want you to think about this. In April, batting third, okay, Paul DeJong hit .360, okay, and had a .423 OBP with a .630 slugging percentage. His OPS was over one. Okay, that's what he did in April.
Yeah,
that tells you how bad he was the rest of the year.
Was bad the rest of the year.
He hit 175. He hit 175 in September.
He rode his April into an All-Star game. That's about the only way it happened.
I'm telling you right now. Now, see, there's the difference, though. Like, when it's going like this for him, the problem is, unlike other things, he can do some things for you, but he's killing you at the plate. That's why that's my thing. Like, you know, the defense is obviously solid as can be. So anyway, just interesting. But like I said, do you bury the guy? No, you don't bury him. Absolutely not. Absolutely. No, this isn't a Paul DeJong got to go thread, but it is. All right. I know we're running up against it, and you've got a fun poll that you want to hit.
Yeah. So, I don't know what podcast or what show I was on last year, and I can't even remember who I was interviewing, but it was there are three C words that Mo uses often in the off season, and I know there was a fourth one somebody suggested, but this is my poll. I stick to three.
Right.
Comfortable, confident, complicated, or the derivative complex, either one. It's funny because there's quite a few votes on this, and it is almost split in the thirds. Like, basically what we're saying, answering on here, is that we don't like any of them. We don't want to hear any of them in this offseason. But the question was, if you could take one of them away from him, which one would you want to take away from him? And complicated is a little bit on top there. Almost 40% of the votes. Confident was 27, which I would have taken that one away. And then comfortable is 34. So
Listen. Go ahead, Jim. So what won?
Complicated.
Okay, here's why I don't like complicated. Okay, let me tell you why I don't like complicated. Because I remember getting Max Scherzer would have been complicated. Okay. Mm-hmm. I read that not from Mosaic. I read it in some social media stuff the last couple days when people have been out there going, Steven, like it was like Gerrit Cole. I think the whole world feels like we can't afford Gerrit Cole. But then for some reason, when Steven Strasburg's a free agent, everybody's like, we need to go get Steven Strasburg. And I'm like, well, they're both going to be expensive. Gold probably more. I don't know. But in the end, it doesn't matter. The bottom line is when people are, I can't believe the number of people that said, we don't need pitching. We need this, we need that. And I'm like, wait a minute. We're not talking about adding some good pitcher. We're talking about adding an elite number one type pitcher. It's not complicated, as Mo would have said like back then. Well, it's complicated. You know, we got Lance Lynn and we got some. No, it's not complicated. It's not complicated. Complicated is, like here, complicated is Dexter Fowler for Kyle Seager. That's complicated. Like, well, yeah. We kind of want to give them both a fresh start. But basically now we have Matt Carpenter and Kyle Seager, who are the same player. They play the same position. I don't know what we're going to do. That's complicated. I get it. That's complicated. Adding an elite talent to your team and figuring out where the chips fall after that is not complicated. That's it. That's why that's the one for me. I get complex. I get confident. I get all that. Listen, here's the thing in the end that everybody wants. Everybody wants a GM and a manager to not use the confident word because they want them to give you blood. And it's their whole purpose, their whole lot in life is to not give it to you. To stand up there and take bullets for their guys. It's their whole lot in life. Okay? Bottom line, complicated is the word.
For me, I can probably, that's why it's so funny because these are his buzzwords, at least in my mind, but I'll point to almost an example for each. I think going into the 2017 campaign, or maybe it was 2018, one of the two, like the last 3 years, we always felt that the Cardinals are, I think it's fair to say most fans thought the Cardinals had possibly needed one or two more moves every offseason before we got to this level of confidence. But when I hear him say, we're comfortable with the team we have, I'm sorry, not comfortable, we're confident in the team we have, and we're all almost consensus saying, like, nah, we're not, and there are a lot of us that don't believe that, that it gets, that's why I don't, that's a weird trying to say, hey, look, we're really confident, and you should be too. Like, nah, it kind of sets me back. Comfortable was a term he used when he said Luke Gregerson was the closer going into spring training.
That's good. See, I like where you're doing it. You're giving us the examples, which are even better, because now I'm sitting here going, I don't like any of them.
I know. That's why Cardinal Nation is so split on this poll. It's so funny because we could all probably remember a time he used one of these and we're like, no, I'm not there with you. And if you can just avoid them, find a better word or, you know, whatever. It was a fun poll to put out there. It was retweeted a few times and a couple comments that came in. Somebody was saying, yeah, you should have competitive in there too. And I don't mind the word competitive. Of course you want to be. It might be some people read it as barely enough. As he stated that on here at RCSmith79. And then Smitty is a good friend, Smitty9. Yes. I was about to say you forgot competitive, but again, my poll, you guys run your own.
That's right. That's
you can
good.
Add it there if you want.
I just, you know, like I said, for me, I get all the other words and their meaning to them. Cause like I said, confident to them, that's their, to me, confident to them is, look, this is what we do. You cannot like it, but this is what we are. Right. Like, so I get it, but I'm just saying that I can't help but think like being in the room and somehow Max Scherzer comes up. And he and his aunt, like a real conversation, right? Like, hey, what do you think of Max Scherzer? And Mo going, it's complicated.
Yeah.
I'm just like, what do you mean? It's complicated. Like, that's not complicated. Like, listen, come up with another word for, we're not going to go there. We're not going to spend that money on that player. Go there.
Right.
Go there. Say that. Say, look, that's a big investment that we're not willing to take.
Right. That's the real reason. And I think if you get down to it, that's exactly what that was about. And it's the same thing with, and thankfully that they, nothing like a Bryce Harper signing didn't happen in St. Louis last year, but it was the word complex. It would add a layer of complexity to the outfield situation, which is true.
But again, same thing. I mean, see, here's my thing. Same thing. Like, what does that really mean? Because he gonna play, and he's better than what you got. Is it Absolutely. Now the end? The real answer is he's gonna play, and he's better than what you got. Is he so much better than what you got that you're prepared to give the guy $30-something million a year? That's really it in the nutshell. I mean, there needs to be a word for that. Now, maybe that is complicated because it's complicated for you. So maybe that is the right word. I don't know.
It could be for him. I think it just makes, and again, I don't want to ignore Mo's entire body of work. Look, they've been competitive damn near every year for almost two decades, right? They've had a couple down years, but yeah, I don't want to. I know I'm throwing a little bit of shade his way, but I mean, his body work's been pretty damn good. I know
we're
disappointed, but it's a hard job, folks. It gets a little complicated, but I'm comfortable going into the offseason.
Well, I'm comfortable saying that's enough of this for today, and I know you got to run. So let's remind everybody to find us at twobirdsonabat.com. Subscribe to the show. Make sure you guys like our Twitter handle at Birds on a Bat Show. Pick us up on Facebook as well, Two Birds on a Bat. Like our page. When you find the pinned post, that's the show. If you'll comment on it, share it, like it, that helps us reach more people. Two Birds on a Bat Show on Instagram as well, and of course as part of lineupmediagroup.fm. Can't thank our sponsors enough for making the show possible. Of course, it starts with Randy Green and InnovativeCompanies.com, residential, commercial, industrial. He's the one that's got you covered. Thank you one last time to our friends Patterson Tire and Service with the text line. It means a lot to us that Patterson Tire and Service wanted to be a part of our show. Give them a call and an opportunity for your business at 618-797-6711. They're located at 3718 Highway 111 in Granite City, Illinois, 62040. Patterson Tire and Service, a whole lot more than a tire store. To the best barbecue in St. Louis, Adam Smokehouse, thank you, as we love, love, love your barbecue, and we love, love, love your support. If you guys want the best barbecue in St. Louis, head on over to Watson Road. Open till 7 on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. Find it, folks. You will love it. Mike and the gang do a great job. They do box lunch orders. They do catering that's second to none. And, of course, you can try the left side and the right side of the menu at different times, as I always recommend. But you will find that it is, in our opinion, the best barbecue. St. Louis, here's your cue. Gators Baseball Academy, check out their four-pillar system, GatorsBaseballAcademy.com. Located in Missouri and Illinois, it is the offseason. It's time to get better. Check them out. You won't be sorry. DrKristenJacobs.com reminds you, every day is Skin Cancer Awareness Day. Check out Ooh La La Spa and Anti-Aging Wellness Center. DrKristenJacobs.com is there to help you if she can take care of anything that you may be needing done. And, of course, her reminder, take care of your skin, folks. You only have it once. For all of us here at Two Birds on a Bat and the gang at Ruffled Feathers, let's go Birds.
Go Birds.
This podcast was a presentation of LightUpMedia.fm.